Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Coast to Coast Combat Hour. I'm your host, Matthew Hawkins, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Ed Carbajal. Ed, what's going on?
Nothing much, man. I mean, we had a funny thing happen on the way to the recording, publishing last week's podcast. As we were recording, that news about Kayla Harrison signing with the UFC and leaving the PFL broke. And then after the fact, we had, we had something that came, a prominent figure in combat sports brought to light that we kind of always hint at almost every week on this podcast. So before we get into some of the upcoming fight news, we might as well talk about the news from between last Tuesday and today. It looks like the biggest thing was the comments John Anik made during his own podcast that he does with Kenny Florian. About him losing patience with the combat sports space and just the fandom, and just because he had an opinion about how a fight that he was on the mic for went. And he kind of just said the quiet part out loud, where we've kind of been saying it for a while. We're not as big as John Anik and Kenny Florian, obviously, but, you know, it's something we've been hinting at maybe the whole last quarter of 2023, and it's just how... I don't know where this weird MMA fandom, I think every sport has it, but I guess because if you're really into this sport, because of what it is, it's, you know, cause you get not for nothing. You catch ass whoop and you say this shit to the wrong person in this sport. Cause these are all people that know how to fight, or at least are hobbyists and they still know how to fight. But there's people that seem to really talk sideways. I mean, I don't know where it's coming from, but the toxicity of it is something that it's not just John Anik that's thought about walking away from the space. You and I have talked about it on here before. We've mentioned other folks in podcasts that have literally put on social media that they're pulling the plug on their own thing because they just can't, they don't get it and they don't like it. I mean, and these are people that have been watching this sport, you know, since its inception, as long as you and I have. So, I don't know what your take on all that was, but when I kept seeing people kind of side with Anik, I felt like it just needed to be amplified, because he did issue an apology, and then he talked with my boy Scott Fontana over at the New York Post. He did an interview with him where he was kind of like apologizing about it, but I don't think there's no need to apologize. I mean, this is America. You can say what the fuck you want. That's the whole point of speaking your will, whether you're for or against how a fight went, you know. Just say, speak your piece and move on.
Yeah, I mean, it's not supposed to be, but I mean, a couple things you got involved here. John Anik is pretty much universally liked throughout the MMA community. Whether you're a huge fan of his work or not, I mean, I'm kind of indifferent. I think he does a good job. I've never met the guy, but he seems like a nice guy, takes his job seriously, and he's been around for a long time. I remember when he used to do Q&As about Bellator. Like on the Fox, like back in the day, almost before smartphones, like it was, you know, there was like a newsletter questionnaire kind of thing. I don't know if it was through MMA Junkie. I don't remember exactly, but he had some kind of thing where early Bellator, when it was like still almost a Spanish speaking organization. All sports have it. I think it's new now to the world of MMA, because for so long, at least for the first, I mean, if we're saying we started in 93, I would say for the first 25 years, roughly, you kind of had to be, you were on pins and needles about even being allowed to have a sport. So I think people, the fans, really guarded it. And I think that the fans that were around, especially in the first, you know, 15 years, really, really guarded it, because they realized the ups and downs that MMA went through to get where it is right now. And, you know, I think blaming Strickland or anything with Strickland is a little bit wrong. I called this, and I mean, you can almost vouch for it. Like, pretty much the McGregor era started that, you know, like, I don't remember, maybe before McGregor. I'm trying to think, like, I mean, Tito Ortiz had his stuff, but it wasn't vitriol and hateful. It was just him and Dana White had their issues, and you know, Tito would occasionally say something stupid and fans would jump on that. But it just seems like once the McGregor thing came, it became like more of a sense of pride in who you were a fight fan of, and you took it personal. And it seemed like people, everything became like personal for it, as opposed to just being a diehard fan and living and dying with your fighters. You felt like you had to defend them, and mm-hmm. you know, that's been my thing with Fedor. Is like, I never felt like I had to defend the guy. I was a fight fan of the guy. I never had to defend any of his actions outside of the ring and stuff like yeah. that. I feel like with social media, and maybe if social media had existed in the early 2000s, Fedor would have been or his management would have been typing up stupid shit that would have set me off the rails yeah. too, you know? But it just seems like that with social media, McGregor effect, I mean, McGregor became famous for his fights, but he became world famous for his shit talk. Mm-hmm. And for his viral moments of, you know, who the fuck is that guy? And, you know, well, I mean, you know, the insults he had for Mayweather and such.
I think a part of it, I don't know if you can really blame the fighters for becoming the characters that they become because they know it gets them attention. I think it's a double-edged sword. Yes, that's part of it. But I also think the fact that, and even Paulie Malignaggi said this, shit, back. I remember he said it to the faces of all the media in front of him when he was doing his thing to face Artem Lobov back in New York. You know, the internet has made it very easy for people to have a voice and build a following, and it's just something about the folks that build these followings, however they build it, and they there's people.
But that was the same group of fans. The Lobov fans were the McGregor fans. I mean, that was yeah. the same. That was no, the same I'm just using pool that as of example. People. Yeah,
I'm just using that as an example. But like, I want to read something that our boy or my boy out in Italy, Al Zolino, who does a lot of breaking European MMA news. So let me read. So Anik on the 27th before the weekend released his statement where he apologized, and he said. You know, like me and a couple other people, he didn't need to apologize. And I just want to read what he said. He was like, I've been following this sport for almost two decades now, and I think we're going through the worst fan base to date, or probably back in the day. Social media wasn't too mainstream, so idiots weren't shouting their useless takes into the void. And I said to him, I said, I think it's both. Like, honestly, it's both are correct. I think that social media has become such a... Because of the ease of access, we're literally carrying it around with us almost 24/7 with our smartphones. So at any moment that you have a thought that you want to spit out into the void, people are just going to put it out there. And unfortunately, there's people that like to tag people like John Anik and fighters and whatever to tell them what, you know, because they want to be heard. But it's just it's a weird, like, I don't know if it's a mental illness that's like a mass, like, fucking virus or a psyop, like I think TikTok is, you know what I mean? Like it's just, it's something that I find to be, it's coming from both places. And I think it's up to the person to decide whether or not they want to react to it. And, but you know, we're all human and everything gets to a boiling point. And I think that was just Anik's boiling point. He shouldn't apologize for it though. Unless, like, you know, UFC was like, yeah, you better issue an apology. But he did it on his podcast platform, not his own personal one. So I don't know.
UFC very well might have told him to issue an apology, mm-hmm. though. That's a good point. I didn't think of that. Yeah, I wish he hadn't. I don't even think it's just a sports thing. I think it's a culture thing. I think it goes back to where our country's at right now and where it started shifting years and years ago, where there's just no more respect. There's just everything. I mean, now with social media, I mean, half the TikTok stars are famous for doing like pranks on people that are like hurting people in public and insulting people. And you got people going to the gym and recording people and acting like that they're a bunch of creeps because they're trying to work out. And
yeah.
I mean, everything's just, it's just a big circus act of fame and glory for insulting people. And I mean, well, you know, it's a back, and that fighters have had to take part in it now because most of these fighters are younger guys mm-hmm. that are coming up in this generation. Now you got the Ian Garys and I don't even know the kneels and putting prison pictures and insulting wives and religions. I mean, it's just gotten to the point where literally, I think, you know, I mean, we saw McGregor start throwing a dolly through a window, mm-hmm. you know, whether that was real or not, you know, I mean,
but they still used it to market an event later.
I just wonder what the next fighter who's desperate for attention is going to do. You know, yeah. are You know, we had the fake fight between Strickland and Duplessis in the crowd. You know, I just feel like that now the UFC is even starting to set stuff up.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Nicholson chiming in here. Exactly, Matt, MMA fan, douchebaggery is a microcosm of greater divide in this country. Yeah, I mean, it's also, what was I going to say before I read that? I had a really good point that I wanted to make before he chimed in. Oh, yeah, it's also kind of like the UFC, to the point of them using that footage to market an event. I mean, now when you look at folks that are getting credentialed to events, it's not it's not guys that are going to school and getting journalism degrees and you know what I mean? It's the Nina Marie Daniels and getting butt naked on whatever. And then, you know, fucking taking a shit on TikTok and you get a billion followers and you suddenly you get credentialed. I mean, he's giving Dana White's giving more FaceTime to folks like that than actual like media places. You know what I mean? And you know, like the Nelk Boys and all that shit. He's on that podcast or whatever, the Full Send Nelk Boys podcast. I think he's on there at least once a month or something like that.
Oh, that's Dana White's thing. Dana White loves to go on interviews with people that don't know anything about the sport because they never question him. I mean, he was just interviewed by Vivek, was it Ramaswamy yesterday?
Yeah, I have that queued up to watch it just to see.
You know, and I watch clips and it's like, you know, I don't think Vivek's in a... first of all, I like the guy. I like how he speaks. I think he's... I like the guy, so... whatever that says about me or whatever, but he's talking to Dana White and he doesn't know that he's being lied to. Vivek doesn't know the history of the UFC. He doesn't, you know, so Dana White loves to go on there and then, oh man, we're great with pay. We're great with pay, but he's never gone on. He's never sat in an interview with somebody who actually knows what the history is and can actually ask him and question him and give him a follow-up question. So that's a thing, you know, I don't even mind the, whatever her name is, the Ninas. I understand the UFC having to use what's available to sell their product in 2024. But this started 10 years ago. Not maybe 8 years ago, 7-ish. And
when they signed with ESPN, I feel like it's,
you know, and I think the guy's a hard worker, and I think that his act probably takes away from how much work he puts in. But the schmo was the start of this shit. We all of a sudden started having guys show up to these press conferences and humpty nose and glasses and going up there and just making clowns.
Jake Sage chiming in. Nelk Boys appeal to the douchey college frat culture, helping the growth of casual fans to the UFC. He doesn't care about the people who are real fans.
I mean, and I know Jake, he's pretty fresh out of college and has been going to UFC events with me for the last, since, you know, 173 Barao Dillashaw card. So, you know, but I don't mind them using the Nelk Boys. I understand that. My point is all these other idiots who just have been polluting the stuff, the nobodies. I mean, every single press conference, you'll see somebody go up to that microphone and ask a question. And you're like, who the hell is that guy? And who the hell came up with him? Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
73 says Schmo and Nina are cringe. I mean, when this, you know, what's funny about the Schmo, and I think we talked about it, like when he first kind of popped up in MMA, because he used that weird gimmick character to get on their radar, and then he stopped doing it. If you've noticed, he doesn't act as good. If you look at when he was making all those faces and noises, he stopped doing it. Now he's just like another regular. He's like the new younger Kevin Isle.
Well, it ran old. He got in the door, but like, and props to him for figuring out a way to get in the door. Yeah. I mean, he's got to make a living. And like I said, this is not a knock on his work ethic, because I've seen the guy around events and I don't know, again, don't know the guy other than just kind of fist bumping him. I told him one day I appreciated his hustle. I mean, he's out there, he's working it. He's at a lot of these events. So it's not a personal thing against the guy.
And I like that he tried to fight Ariel Helwani.
I mean, you know, but I just, it all, my thing is these other guys, you know, and it's not so much that they're there. It's that somebody like you, and I don't count myself because I haven't put in the hours and stuff writing and grinding like you have. Somebody like you would struggle to get a UFC credential. And that's the part that really sucks, is because there's a million people Maybe not a million. There's hundreds of thousands of people like you who grind the fuck away at what they're doing, and they're being held away because your spot's being taken by some clown that's going up there and asking if some lesbian slept with a male fighter. I mean, that's the kind of shit we get. Yeah. And it's just, it's like, I don't, the UFC should go back to funneling who's asking those questions. They don't want to do it because it creates viral moments. Nothing's better than the UFC. If they still play that. That idiot who asked Patty if he's sleeping with Meatball, Molly, you know, like, it's just moronic, but they'll still use it. I'll still see it coming across social media, you know? And so I think it's just created an atmosphere, and I don't know how you get out of it. It scares me because it seems like it's heading towards just a sport where just everybody's just idiots. I mean, and we all kind of were, but now it's like we're just mean idiots now. You know, and that's the difference. Yeah. We were all just kind of hard-headed, you know. I mean, if you were in this sport when we got into
the
sport.
It's not just the Just Bleeds anymore. Now it's like,
no.
It's like Just Bleed, but you're also like, you know, pick puppies and shit when you're alone.
You're just an asshole.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just an asshole, and you barely know anything that's going on, and you're just an asshole. You follow just the UFC. This isn't MMA fans. You don't go to like... I don't think you'd go to a Ryzen card and hear a bunch of people talking fucking shit. Guessing. But Ryzen could come to the U.S. and you wouldn't have that.
Yeah, no. I mean, well, I went to the one card.
Yeah, yeah, and that was I told you that was one of the most knowledgeable crowds. I was shocked that everybody in that arena knew who all these people were.
Superlek and all those people.
Superlek now my mind, you're losing my mind, but it's just
the Muay Thai chick. I know who you're thinking of. I don't know why I forgot her
name. Everything's just Rod Tang and all of them. But they all got huge
Stan
ovations.
Fairtex. That's
Stan Fairtex.
Yeah,
I mean, she became a star. I honestly wish one wouldn't have taken so long to come back to the U.S. A follow up event to that could have been nice with a lot of those guys returning, but that's neither here nor there. But it's a fan base. It's a particular one. You see it when there's events, especially in Vegas. Vegas is the Mecca because you see it on TV. And if you're not in the arena, you in Vegas, people don't show up to like the second fight of the main card. Like
which I
it's,
never understood.
Which you, of course you never understood, but you're not part of that crowd, you know. Jason commenting on the one card. Yeah, I mean that was fantastic, and you know, some of the grappling stuff that night turned out to be slow, and I know Kaposa online has issues with some of their grappling and positionings on their card and stuff, but I think that, you know, it was fresh, and like, you know, even BKFC. Now BKFC is a bunch of goons, but I haven't seen a fight in a crowd at a BKFC event. You would think that if I go to some farm in the middle of Kansas and there's a bunch of drunken Midwesterners sitting at a barn basically watching bare knuckle fighting, you would think that you'd see something. Never. Everybody's polite. Maybe it's just the part of the country, but it's just different. And it just seems like UFC is the one you go to, and man, you bump into somebody and somebody wants to have a problem with you. And it's just a different kind of crowd. And
I mean, we're going to talk about BKFC too, but I watched Prospect Series this past weekend. And one thing I feel like their pacing is so good, and the fights are the way they pace the fights, and especially between rounds, you really don't have time to
That's true too. And some of these small arenas they have, the beer lines are like 3 miles long.
Yeah, so it's like like if you want to get your money's worth, you better focus on the fight and not try to pop any shit in the crowd.
That's true.
I mean, we've spent enough time on that. We got to talk about when we were recording last week. I mean, it was literally like as soon as we published last week's episode, we saw news that Kayla Harrison signed with the UFC. Which I, for one, I'm happy for her that she did it, because I know she really wanted to fight. I know she wanted to stay busy. She was pretty public about that since her time with the PFL, especially during COVID, because, you know, they wanted to shelve all the fighters, and she was the only one that went and competed elsewhere. So if you thought she was going to stick around and wait for them to tell her, you know, who and when to fight, I'm kind of glad she's someplace where she can at least get 3 fights in 1 year, you know. At 135, I know is a concern, but I hear she did a test cut. But you know, we'll know from her mouth when we hear it from her, what she's done and how 135. Because, well, the other thing she used to say, especially when the events I've covered that she was in and, you know, the New Year's Eve stuff here in New York, she was pretty adamant. She kind of liked not going cutting weight, but we know we shouldn't get to 145 because she did it twice during COVID. So another 10 pounds. I mean, I never doubt the drive of an Olympic athlete. So I feel like, I mean, whether it's healthy for her or not, we'll find out when she's, you know, hits UFC 300. But, you know, it's a funny matchup, though. It's a funny matchup at 135, like her and Holly Holm. It's like almost like they're kind of setting her up to lose to Holly Holm. That's what I think.
Well, the UFC's, you know, does a great job of that. You know, like let's make sure Gonzaga fights Krokop before he fights Couture, but let's give Mehdi Sanchez and Chet Congo before he even, you know, like they act like they got to build a name for Harrison. Mm. That's the thing. Like they sign her like she's the biggest free agent signing ever, but we got to make sure we give her a couple tune-up fights to really make sure that the UFC fans know who she is. You know, I mean, that's because the MMA fans know who she is. Mm. You bring up a good point about her getting to the UFC and at least having maybe some more stability, because in my comments the last couple of weeks, obviously I'm not as big on this PFL as some of the other people on this, you know, in this media world of MMA. I she better be successful because it makes her look like she's dodging Cyborg. In my opinion, maybe that's just me. I'm a Cyborg fan. Cyborg's, yeah. Cyborg I see everywhere. In my every fight I go to, I see Cyborg. So, whereas Harrison, I've never met, never seen her fight. You've interviewed her several times. She's kind of done a lot of East Coast things. So you have a little bit more of a perspective with her because you've actually had to speak with her and maybe got a vibe of how she is. But it sure looks like she doesn't want to fight Cyborg. I mean, it really does. I mean, she hasn't even made a comment about it. You know, like, I just feel like it doesn't look great that you're willing to cut to a weight, which you know is going to stretch you to the limit, and you had the super fight in your organization. It was the first time.
And I feel like we'd have to ask her. Maybe we can get her to chime in, because, you know, with the whole, you know, PFL absorbing Bellator, and them taking control. And we know, it's my understanding, especially I've reached out to a couple of Bellator fighters already to find out that they're pretty much Kayla Harris. What I said about Kayla Harrison, they're doing it to a lot of the Bellator guys right now. Like they're telling them to wait, and they're not giving them much else information. And I know the Cyborg's Twitter account, especially, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, where she was kind of like, I mean, at first, you know, she said she was, The Twitter account was saying pretty much what you said as far as, like, you know, Harrison dodging Cyborg. But then it looks like things are coming to light on that end, where the account is now saying, I kind of understand it, because it seems like there's just a lot of...
They're taking shots at PFL right now, and mm-hmm. Don Davis, for not responding to them mm-hmm. and giving them clarification as well. Mm-hmm. This is where I would like the idea of some of these people. If PFL and Bellator aren't serious about using Chris Cyborg, see, here's the thing: what they're going to do with Chris Cyborg, right? We just saw it. They announced their first Bellator event for Ireland in March, mm-hmm. and it's Corey Anderson against. You want to remember? Remind me which Irish fighter they decided to put on the card in Ireland.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
I saw the guy's got a few wins in Bellator. Hell, I might have even been at one of his fights, but I don't remember who the heck the guy is. So now we got Rod Moore or something like that. So it's what I suspected. So here's what's going to happen. We've already been told there's an East Coast and a West Coast Bellator event. They're going to come to Southern California, and they're going to use Cyborg. Mm-hmm. Of course they would. She sells out arenas left and right in Southern California, so that's what they're going to use her for. So she might not fight for 8 months. When they decide to do that West Coast show, that's what they're going to do with her, because they're not going to risk using her, because they got the pit bulls. They could use them in Southern California. AJ McKee, you could use in Southern California. But as I stated, when he headlined that Long Beach card, I don't remember the number, 290, or his poster somewhere around here. Rena wasn't a good sellout. Wasn't a good selling. So I don't. Cyborg is the name that they would sell on the West Coast. And I think that that's what they're going to do. And I think that unless you give a schedule with all these events announced, I think these people are going to be held in limbo for a long, long time. Yeah. Just like they held several of their fighters in limbo before.
Yeah, and again, with the feedback that I got from asking around, you know, a lot of them are they're being told to wait, and they don't want to fucking wait. So,
well, they haven't. I mean, what was the last? I mean, the last Bellator event was what?
301.
November? Yes, November 17th.
Yeah,
it was November 17th, Chicago. Yeah, they that was the last one. So we're already what, 3 months? November, mm-hmm. December, 2 months, 2.5 months now. Past their last event, which means a single Bellator fighter has a fight 2.5 months.
The other thing is, like, if they don't want to wait, I mean, how tight are those contracts? If a fighter says, "Listen, I'm tired of waiting," release PFL probably saying,
sounds like what Kyla Harrison did.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, it sounds like they basically admitted she had a fight left on her contract, but Don Davis and PFL weren't going to stand in her way.
Because, I mean, with all these deals that they're announcing and signing, we don't know what the real, you know, their funding rounds are looking like. And with the wad they blew on Ngannou, who knows? It's probably better for them to just say, "Oh, if you want to go, go." That way, we don't have to pay you. You know.
Well, I think that's what we're going to see. I think we will see that with Ngannou down the line. Mm-hmm. I think we will, because I don't think Ngannou's ever going to fight in PFL. I think they're going to become pissed off at him when he has his fight with Joshua and he pockets another $30 million and he basically tells PFL, and I think he'll end up either back in the UFC or he'll end up headlining Saudi Fight Night, you know, whatever they're calling that series.
Riyadh season.
Which, oh, I think
by
so.
The way, Riyadh season runs from October to March. They started doing that in 2019. I was researching it over the weekend. It's like it's a sports and entertainment like thing that they have going, and it started in 2019. So every time we're gonna see these big like gazillion dollar mega like exhibition super fights, it's always gonna be between October and March, as long as Riyadh season's a thing in Saudi Arabia.
I mean, I think we're gonna get close to the point where fighters are gonna start signing with them. Like, if yeah. Conor McGregor were to become a free agent, why would he not sign with
somebody
him?
Just said that. Yeah, the I forget Turkey. I can't remember the guy's name that's behind it. His first name is Turkey, not like the animal, T-U-R-K-I. I forget his name, but somebody just said that, like, he might be the guy that can make all these fights that we, you know, the super fights we want to see. If we see, like, what was the other one? We're talking about making, like, you know, Diaz McGregor 3 happening there.
And the thing is, they don't have to have a mega card. Like, it doesn't have to be, like, the way they put on their show, like they did with Fury and Ngannou. Same kind of thing. They had that fight in a whole nother arena than they even had the prelims in. They literally could have 7 boxing fights and then have an MMA fight main event. Like, there doesn't have to be, it's not about the seriousness or the sport per se. It's the spectacle that they're putting on, and they've got the money to do it. That's why I think you're going to start seeing perhaps something like that, because you only got to fight one time a year if you're fighting for those guys.
Yeah.
You might have to fight one time a career when you're fighting for those guys.
Your boy Jake is asking, are you referring to the Saudi guys throwing bags at these stars for
some ways?
Yes,
it.
We are. Yes, we are.
Yep.
Jake, I know you missed the first part. It's, we were talking about the Riyadh season and Turkey Al something that I was trying to figure out his full name. Before we move on to the BKFC, actually, he had a question before he asked that. He was asking if we had predictions for Jake Sage, asking if we have UFC 300 main event predictions, I guess, as to who. I have a feeling that's going to be announced tonight while we're recording this, because that's when the Kayla Harrison news came out, and it seems like Tuesday nights, since we moved to Tuesday nights, usually when we're wrapping up is when Dana White goes live and says, you know, I just took a shit on Vince McMahon. You know, like
MMA Junkie, or not MMA, Tapology is usually pretty good. And Tapology's had Leon Edwards versus Bilal Muhammad listed as that main event for a while now. Mm. I have a feeling you might try to get sold a, you know, what, chicken shit and called a chicken sandwich as what Brock Lesnar used to say there. But
you know what? Going back to the fandom thing, they'll eat it right up.
Well, they'll get sold on it. They'll go, they'll switch. But if you're asking, I've been floating the idea of it being a surprise and something involving McGregor. That's just in my mind. McGregor's gone. It seems like it's gone kind of quiet. We were told he definitely wasn't fighting in June. You got the Roadhouse movie coming out where he's all over it. So there's something to kind of put his name
which
behind.
Which looks good if you saw the trailer. I'm actually interested in that.
I haven't heard anything from Nate Diaz. Now, I don't follow the guy extremely close on social media, but he seems like he's been fairly quiet. I there's a part of me that thinks if the UFC really feels like they have to do something, I could see McGregor Diaz getting announced last second. USADA's not in the way anymore. I don't think it's going to be Chandler. I really think they're going to screw Chandler over. I've been saying since the day one that the minute that they announced they were coaching tough, but there was no finale and no fight announced. I felt like there were shenanigans involved there.
Chandler's been such a team player that if they shaft that poor guy, you know, fucking, you better give him let him commentate fights for the rest of his life.
But that's who gets shafted. That's who gets shafted.
That's
he should have known. Yeah. He should have known. He fell for it just like, I mean, okay, let's hope he gets the fight. But if he doesn't get the fight, then he fell for it just like a lot of other fighters who have been told a million times, win one more fight. Win one more fight and you get the title shot. You win one more fight. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing you know, you're seeing a 17th rematch at a weight class and somebody else eventually loses and they never get that shot. I don't know. I don't know if that's the money fight anymore. I mean, Chandler's lost his steam. I mean, you've got new fans that don't even know who Michael Chandler is. He hasn't fought in, 2 years now? You know? I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but, he was losing some fights, but he was still hot as could be in the UFC. And I feel like...
fights were boring. Yeah.
I mean, he could have headlined 3 events by now.
What's it? He says, I was originally thinking Islam, but I don't know who the F he would fight. I don't know why I'm... censoring myself. Who the fuck you would fight? No chance Leon takes a fight versus him.
Islam's supposed to be hurt. According to the UFC, he's had to have surgery. He's out despite hitting the slopes of, you know, Norway. You're going to get me into the drug test failure and hiding. I don't know. Personally, I kind of like the 300 card. It's kind of a sloppy mess of just a bunch of really good fighters. I think it's going to create good fights.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there's no fight that's going to be announced that's going to, unless it's McGregor, because that's the fan base that runs the UFC. I don't think there's any fight they can announce where everybody's going to be universally happy.
They kind of need, though, not for nothing. They kind of, I feel like, I mean, they're doing well or whatever, the $1 billion valuation that they have, whatever. But I feel like it's just they need something to kick up the dust a little, especially, you know, before April, because that's when their antitrust lawsuit starts going seeing the light of day. I feel like you might be right, man. I mean, to announce if they put Chandler McGregor on 300, I mean, that's not for nothing. You're gonna do a 300 event, like that's everyone that whatever's underneath that. Is gonna be. I mean, I know we have the Holloway BMF Gaethje thing, which I know Gaethje just did a good 20-minute interview with Okamoto. I haven't finished watching because Okamoto's voice puts me to sleep. But
the other thing that kind of hints me towards maybe something like that involving McGregor is historically McGregor's not gonna fight on a card where other champions are taking the pay per view share. Mm. Right now, you've only got one title fight. I know the BMF, but that doesn't count. Right now, you've only got one title fight, and it's Weili Zhang. It's a female strawweight title fight. The UFC could headline McGregor over that fight, and him probably not be too concerned about how much money Weili's going to take out of his pocket. Mm-hmm. I don't think they'd do that with Leon and Bilal. I don't think they would insult Leon like that because of the run he's on, and the UFC wants to build off of him. So I don't think you want to lower his stock by putting him in a co-main event necessarily. If it's not under a non-title fight. And I don't think McGregor's going to share the pot with two champions. O'Malley's fighting 299.
Yeah. I was gonna say.
Yeah. So that's not happening. But anyways, yeah. So I think there's a chance of something. I think Edwards and Muhammad is highly likely though, and then them just to sell the whole card. Mm-hmm. I think that's where we're at right now, and it won't be a terrible card. Fans, we said it since day one. Fans thought that this was going to be like 10 title fights. It's not. It wasn't at 200. It wasn't at 100. It's just every time it comes around, we think, now's the Super Bowl. Now we're going to get the Super Bowl event that we've dreamed of. And the UFC doesn't have to do it. They just don't have to. Yeah. It financially, they don't have to. They don't have to pay, they don't have to pay the premium to do it anymore. Most of their pay-per-views are already prepaid by ESPN. They don't even have to. They could put on 20 garbage men, and they're still going to make a massive profit. Yeah. So that's where that is. But let's move on from that. We'll talk more about 300 when it comes around. You mentioned BKFC's prospect series. I unfortunately didn't get a chance to catch up with that as I was out and about on Saturday night.
Tell them what you were doing.
I was sitting ringside for some Dwarfinators wrestling. So yeah.
That's how hard up Matt is to get to events.
No, buddy bought me a ticket. Couldn't pass up the opportunity. Laughed all night long. Not for nothing.
Matt sent pictures and video. I want to go now. I gotta go. Like now, I want to go. I already messaged my buddy Jeff, who's into pro wrestling out here. And if Dwarfinators comes out to New York City, I'm there.
Oh gosh, fun night though, fun night, and a lot of people, sold out, standing room, crowd was into it. It was wild. It was. There it is.
There you go, Kevin Nicholson. Well, we're doing the podcast about the wrong thing, apparently.
Yeah, maybe. Let's see if I can get Meatball and Rufino or some of those guys to want to come on the show.
BKFC this weekend.
Yeah, bare knuckle fighting. This weekend, their GOAT. I know a lot of people, it's the Mike Perry. Their GOAT is Luis Palomino, the hard-hitting savage that was an MMA buzzsaw. That put on spectacular fight after spectacular
fought
fight.
Two wars against Justin Gaethje, went back in the World Series of Fighting. Not for nothing, he actually wants to fight Mike Perry. Told him at the last event that Perry was at in the press conference. Like that. Mike Perry talking about sharing a marquee with a guy that's going to like make a big BKFC pay-per-view. Luis Palomino's that guy.
Palomino kind of got put on the back burner when Perry got signed. Perry had the name. Perry was able to bring in Rockhold, bring in Eddie Alvarez's guys came in, with his social media. Palomino's not as big of a flashy, he doesn't say the stupid shit that kind of gets the, I like Mike Perry. Don't get me wrong. I'm into what he's doing these days. But Palomino is what this sport's about. Really what all combat sports is about. Just a guy who's grinded and he found his path. 9-0 in BKFC. I mean, you're talking a sport where a single cut, anything. Mm-hmm. Can end the fight and 9-0 looking to go 10-0 against Austin Trout, who's only 1-0. Only win was over Diego Sanchez. If you remember, that fight took place in New Mexico last year. But a professional champion, former world champion. So somebody that has the tools. If he fights like he did against Diego Sanchez, though, Palomino will hurt him badly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. I mean, I'm glad that this fight is actually on this weekend and that it's on Fubo Sports. I mean, apparently they're going to be showing BKFC is going to be on Fubo Sports a lot more, because the prospect series I watched, and there's dudes fighting, by the way. I mean, if you haven't watched it, dude, you got to watch the prospect series. Again, they're prospects, so I don't remember the guy's name, but now I'm starting to see people like how combat sports evolves. Now I'm starting to say people that are training their striking, the guy that knocked out, he does like a left hook, but he curves his fist. It's almost like it's almost like a hammer fist to slice the dude with his knuckle. And it's just watching these guys develop technique and seeing combat sports evolve. People think it's BKFC. It's just guys, slamming hands into each other. But there's dudes that are perfecting what guys like Palomino and Mike Perry are already doing. And the Prospect Series was a good example of that. Sean Wheelock, during that broadcast, he was saying something. I mean, we have to get him back on to find out the details, but he was saying something along the lines like BKFC is getting they're going to be able to get to other places. And I remember him hearing say Mohegan Sun. I don't know if that was approval that the Mohegan Athletic Commission is going to allow BKFC there, but if they do, that's something I'm going to try to get to cover, like on Fight Week, just like the way I used to do Bellator, because watching the Prospect Series and this event coming this weekend, if they can stack a card and fill the Mohegan Sun Arena with guys like Palomino Perry and all the other great fighters that fight there, I'm all for it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's legal in California now. I'm still waiting for an announcement on their first event, but California is going to lead the way for a lot of that. So Connecticut, if California is allowing it, Connecticut's not going to hold back. They're not going to, especially now with Bellator not being on the scene out there. It only makes sense to start booking dates at some of those arenas to make up some of the lost, you know, kind of income that you had by being kind of your East Coast fight capital was really the Mohegan Sun for a while. Mm-hmm. The co-man event, Robbie Peralta, hardcore MMA fans will remember him, fought in the UFC, fought in Strikeforce, had a big upset over Takaya at the Masvidal versus Mendez San Diego fight card, Strikeforce card. At the time, Takaya was a big name in Japan. He came out here in association with Dream. Peralta pulled off the upset, which really led to him getting a little bit of a name and actually working his way into the UFC, where he had some success, but also 3-0 in the UFC. Also a local guy to me, fights out of a town about 30 miles south of me. So, Robbie Peralta, exciting. Don't know a bunch about Henry, but also 3-0. Doolittle on the card.
I'm seeing more and more women sign up to fight bare knuckle, which is crazy to me.
They usually get one or two fights a card. And it's been a slow development, I would say, from the, I don't want to be disrespectful, but kind of the trailer park throwdown woman to like actual athletes. And like you said, people who are establishing a technique. I noticed it real early when I got into this. I mean, when we talked to Wheelock and stuff and Lytle and those guys, I talked to them and they agreed that like there's certain guys that have techniques that are different than, and it's a different style. It's not, there's a different, and it was hard for me to explain back then, but now you're seeing it and stuff because there's just different, it's such a different nuances to ways you can win fights and it sounds gruesome, but the cuts and the breaking noses and stuff like there's ways to do it. And
that was amazing what I saw in the Prospect Series. So definitely get a chance to, if you watch it, But, speaking of women, one of the things that I saw Cyborg say was Fajeda, who I know fights here, kind of like went to her after her boxing match out in your neck of the woods a couple of weeks ago when she won, and was like, well, you know, come fight me for this, you know, come fight me in BKFC. And you know, I mean, talking about how loose the PFL contracts seem to be, if she can just get out and do whatever the hell she wants, not for nothing. I mean, I think that would literally, you know, that it would be a Mike Perry level BKFC event. If Cyborg did,
it would be huge. And you say that, and I think California, it's legal in California now. She could headline an event. Christina Fajeda's from San Diego. I mean, it's Cyborg's in the Orange County area. I mean, you're literally, it's built in for a location, and that Christina's huge name. I mean, I hear people, I've heard, before I even knew who she was, I used to see her. I think I saw her fighting an Invicta event, and people in the crowd would chatter about her, about who, you know, and she didn't have great success in MMA, but there was a chatter like this person's got something to her that is a little different. You know what I mean? And you can look at her and maybe figure that out, but she, you know, she's a savage just like Cyborg. It makes sense. She's much smaller than Cyborg. But you know, Cyborg is always about the Grand Slam. You know, she's the Grand Slam champion of MMA, adding a fifth belt, a BKFC title belt to kind of end your career.
Yeah.
You know, and she grabs the PFL one from Pacheco and then says, see you at a PFL, and she finishes up her career. I mean, there's a pathway to some a crazy kind of career wrap, you know, finish up for one of the greatest fighters of all time.
Yeah.
And I say greatest fighters of all time. That's what pisses me off about this PFL thing. And I am a Cyborg fan, but my God, like, I just can't imagine them dicking around with other fighters. You know, I mean, so she deserves the respect that any of these all-time legends deserve. I mean, it's beyond her legacy of the sport is you know, I think she's the greatest female fighter of all time. I know people like Nunes and stuff. Cyborg to me has been a wrecking machine since day one, and that's you know, to me, that's just going to be how it is.
One of the things that happened at the last pay-per-view, you know, Amanda Nunes was there cage side, and she talked to Megan Oliva about possibly coming back. And then you see Kayla Harrison is there. Nunes and Harrison trained together, but there was talk of them fighting as well. I mean, if the UFC can get those three back on the roster at the same time, they can do something to really wake up to the division. I mean, they have Nunes,
but Cyborg's not going to fight at 135. Cyborg ain't doing that. Yeah. She's not going to do that. She doesn't need to do that. It does no good to drain herself down.
No.
And I mean, she's discredited off of a loss at 145. No, but so give her a
Harrison's
chance.
Harrison's going to do it. Apparently she's going to, I mean,
I don't think she will. I think it'll be 140 pound catch weight at a week out. but we'll see. I mean, I gotta see it. And, but you know, I don't think, I think the matchup with Holly Holm is not good for her. And that scares me to say, because Holly Holm is like Dramamine at this point. you know,
I 100% agree with everything you're saying. It's funny that you're saying that, 'cause I'm like, you know, the comparisons of Harrison to Ronda Rousey came up a lot when she was coming on the scene. So of course they're going to match her up with, you know, the person that killed the Ronda Rousey hype, Holly Holm. So I'm with you, man.
They want Ronda 2.0. That's what they want. And I get it. I get it. And she's primed. If she can make that weight, she will be champion within a year.
Yeah.
There is nobody in that division that will be able to stop her takedowns. Now, she might get subbed by somebody. She might slip up. But if she is on her game, there's nobody there that's strong enough to be able to compete with her. I mean, you will see a Ronda 2.0, and it'll be somebody who just maybe ground and pounds their opponents more
her focus. I mean, like I said, you know, I've talked to her in person at media events, at least in the scrum, not one-on-one, but just the intensity that comes off of her when she talks about competition, including fighting Cyborg back in the 2019 season that she was the champion. Yeah, that was when she was last champion, 2019 PFL season. Like talk of fighting Nunes and Cyborg came up, and you know, she was still training with Nunes, so she wasn't trying to be too flexing on Nunes. But the talk of Cyborg is, I know it's not a fight that she doesn't want. I think it's just the shit that's going on in the business side of sport is what's making it not happen. I really don't think, I mean, they're fighters. They want to fight the biggest fights, and it's just the people running the show that are fucking it up for them.
Yeah. I mean, I think that. I think there's something to be said about there being the perception of a weak champion, and her seeing that pathway to gold being easier than it's ever been. I mean, I think that's human nature, and I don't hold that against her. I just wanted to see the Cyborg fight. So it's selfish on my part, perhaps. That fight was, we were finally at a point where I think that
we thought we were going to get it. Yeah.
We thought we were going to get it. And maybe the Pacheco Cyborg fight will actually be a better fight, but it's going to be another one of those. Well, we never know. It's going to be another, you know, when I say Ronda 2.0, I feel like it's going to be another one of those. Well, we're never going to know. Mm. We're never going to know, because one fighter kind of, in perception, at least for me, is one fighter didn't kind of want that fight. But you know, I don't know what the money situation is. I don't know what the UFC offered her. They might've offered her more money than any sane person could ever, you know, turned down.
More money or more fight? Because I know one thing she said, because she did the interview with ESPN, and I wrote about it. And again, talking to her when she's dressed, wanting to compete. I know Kayla Harrison, like, you tell her to sit down and wait, which I know that seems to be the PFL thing, word on the street, sit and wait, and we'll let you know that she doesn't want to do that. So,
yeah. All right. Well, I think that pretty much wraps us up for this week. Again, BKFC this Friday, February 12th. Looks like it's on FUBU TV. Looks like it's on the app. Prelims are usually on YouTube as
February
well.
February 2nd.
What did I say?
You said February 12th.
Oh, I was thinking the two, but February 2nd. February 2nd, this Friday. So, yeah, that's the...
Yeah, you're getting dwarf-minded.
Yeah. All right, fans can follow the show at Combat Hour on Twitter, Coast to Coast Combat Hour on Instagram. Follow me, Matthew Hawkins, at MMAHawk21 on Twitter and Instagram. Follow Ed at Carbazol on Twitter, Carbeerzol on Instagram, Old Head Carb on Twitch. And that wraps us up. Thanks for the comments, everybody. It was nice hearing from multiple people tonight. Thank you for listening, and have a good night, everybody, and enjoy the Just Bleed on Friday night.
Yes, sir. And real quick, shout out to my buddy, Ralph Santiago. He's laid up in the hospital. Hopefully he's listening to the podcast. Let him know. Thoughts and prayers, buddy. Get home safe. Peace.
Good night.